Welcome back. Michael Warren Thomas here. It's Discover the Finger Lakes at SaveYourLife.com, and this is the heart of the grape growing season. We have grapes that you can see now. The wineries are posting photos of them now that flowering is over and the grapes are starting to grow, and a little bit of rain this week is probably great news for the wineries. Exception of maybe two vineyards that I know of, and there's probably only a couple of others. The vineyards of the Finger Lakes are not irrigated. The Red Tail Ridge put in irrigation lines when they installed their grapes, installed the vines, partly just because that's a tender and challenging time getting the new vines established, but then they would have them there if they need them. And I don't think they've used them, the irrigation, very often over the years since they planted, but without this thunderstorms and things coming up, they probably would have been using them. I think I saw irrigation lines at Heart and Hands on the east side of Cayuga Lake also, but that's it. Virtually none of the vineyards are irrigated here, and the ones, like Red Tail Ridge, it's a drip irrigation system, so it's very efficient. They're not using overhead sprinklers or anything like that, partly because they really don't want the extra humidity, and it would be a tremendous waste of water. You end up watering the grass and the weeds that are between the vines more than anything. So drip irrigation is what they have at Red Tail Ridge. But again, virtually all the wineries and grape growers depend on Mother Nature. And certainly a challenging week for, it's just the vines for anyone with the heat we've had. And I hope your gardens have survived so far. If they've survived to this point, some rain today will probably save them and keep you from having to continue to water, at least for the time being. I saw a note from Edible Finger Lakes. They are still raising money through subscriptions so they can print their next issue. And you can get six issues for $36 and a two-year subscription for $63. And they put together an e-cookbook to give to their new subscribers. It's got photos, cocktails, food, desserts, places like Finger Lakes Distilling, the FLX table, Rue Claire chocolates. A bunch of different people contributed to this. And again, they hoping to get 3,000 new subscribers. They launched this a couple months ago, and I don't know how far along they are, but if you're not a subscriber, you should become one. It's, I think, an essential publication for our region. It makes our region better. It's part of a group called Edible Communities, and they have publications around the United States. I think it was started in Ojai, California, the original one, and then they franchised, essentially or licensed the use of Edible and some of the connections and things that they have. Edible Cape Cod was the first one outside of Edible Ojai, which is spelled O-J-A-I, Ojai, California. I've never been there, don't know anything about it, but that's where the people that launched Edible Communities, I think it's where they lived. Now there's something like 60 publications around the United States and Canada. There's Edible Toronto, there's Edible Brooklyn, Manhattan, South Bay, Boston, Chicago, summer regions like the Finger Lakes, summer specific cities. And you might check out ediblecommunities.com, see if there's some edible publications near where you have friends or family, and maybe send them a subscription. I've seen probably 20 different edible publications from around the country, and they're really very consistent, excellent photography. Not that many ads, and the ones they have are useful. Hopefully, the way people see promotion and things that I do of my sponsors, these are places you want to know about. They're generally so small that they don't advertise in general media, and so it's really these niche publications, which is the best place to find them. So, and check out ediblecommunities.com, and you can get a subscription for Edible Finger Lakes by going to ediblefingerlakes.com. They are going to be donating 10% of their subscription revenue to food banks. So, again, a bunch of different reasons to join and keep this publication here through some challenging times for everyone. Ediblefingerlakes.com. Just yesterday I noticed Bricolo Tree and Lawn Care, their nursery on 441. They're going to be doing a class next month, which is unusual. I haven't seen anyone offer this. It's called leaf casting, and this is a way to take natural casts of leaves, things that can be used as decoration. It's in essence a sculpture, but if you've been intrigued by the textures of leaves in your garden, in the landscape, maybe, it doesn't have to be any particular type of plant. It could be shrubs, trees, perennials. It could be weeds. But again, unusual opportunity, natural leaf castings. And I think at this point they're hoping to have an in-person workshop, but they did a hyper tufa one last month, I think, and had kits available for people to take home and do that, you know, with online instruction. So there are multiple options, but again, kind of a unique opportunity to turn some of the leaves and things into a more permanent artwork, and perhaps, you know, it gets you thinking about creating artwork and sculpture and these kinds of leaf castings, maybe doing some painting or sketching. And the more time that you can spend out in nature, it's, you know, everyone sort of finds their own reason for doing that. Some people like to exercise, and so, you know, spend more time outside running or jogging. Some people are interested in birds, and they spend more time outside looking and listening for birds. By the way, Cornell Lab of Ornithology, I saw someone post that they have an app that will help you identify birds from your phone based on the songs. So it's kind of like some of the apps and various online sources. I forget some of the common ones for identifying music. So you can, you know, a song comes on the radio, you can use your phone to figure out what song that is. This is something similar from Cornell Lab of Ornithology. You can help identify the birds that might be outside your back door or while you're hiking, or wherever you might hear them. But again, if you find more reasons to be outside, that's a good thing during this pandemic, to spend more time outside. But also, you may discover insects. You may discover the texture of leaves, perhaps mushrooms that are growing, or the mosses and lichens. There's so much to discover. You start looking into them, you discover they're fascinating worlds that you weren't aware of. And so we were lucky in our area. We have so much natural beauty. You can go out and photograph streams and waterfalls. And photography is a great way to spend more time outside, taking photos of sunsets and sunrises, a misty, cool day. Hard to imagine those during the heat wave that we've had. But again, finding an excuse to spend more time outside in Japan in particular, they have something called the forest bathing, which I've mentioned before. This is really a therapeutic time in the woods where the trees sort of reach out and touch you. And it's doesn't have to be hours. It varies from person to person. Some people probably it has no effect on them, but you don't know unless you try. And once you do, and you become more mindful of what's happening, like listening to the bird songs, that's a way to connect with Mother Nature. And the health benefits of this idea of forest bathing, which is a real thing, it's used, I think, fairly frequently in Japan, is something newer here as a mainstream idea. But the idea is to get out and spend time among the trees. Doesn't need to be huge trees. Just needs to be out and kind of experiencing nature. And it lowers blood pressure. It has lots of positive benefits beyond the exercise of being outside and the fresh air, a little bit of sunshine. It is also shady under those trees, so you can go there on very hot days and find a huge difference in temperature in the shade of the trees. So go in search of some trees that you can hike around. Maybe it's just appreciating some of the street trees that are in your neighborhood. It used to be that neighborhoods in Rochester and around the United States had this kind of one tree as the main tree. It was the elm tree for decades that was the main tree. And from photos that I've seen, they very tall trees. They would arch over the roads and really create these tunnels that you would drive through. And Dutch elm disease took out the elm trees, almost all of them. And so cities replanted, and Rochester, at least in our neighborhood in the 19th Ward, replanted with Norway maples, which was a terrible choice, basically. It's an invasive tree, and now they're all growing in our backyards also. It's not a very long-lived tree. So those Norway maples, a lot of them were fading right about the time we got the ice storm in 1991, and it just crippled them. They were already about at the end of their life cycle, and the ice just tore them apart. And as a result, in the 19th Ward, we have very few Norway maples that are left from those original plantings that replaced the elm trees. And the city forester I think around the country decided that after that, it was better to plant a variety of trees and avoid a monoculture. So now in most streets, at least in our neighborhood, and generally around the city, you'll find quite a range of different street trees. Might be Zelkova, there's perhaps maples I don't know if they've used, I think they have used some oak trees, a bunch of other trees, which, then you go to a few of the streets around Rochester that still have the London plane trees or sycamores, and they didn't get hit by the ice storm because they're so tough, almost virtually no damage to them, I don't think, and it makes me kind of regret that we went with all this mashup of trees It's good not to have a monoculture throughout an entire neighborhood, but a monoculture on one street can look kind of cool, depending on the tree that's chosen. And so there are a few of these streets that are left. Crawford in the South Wedge comes to mind. Merchants Road in Browncroft area. There's another small street you can see from 490 that's just off of, basically right near where Rooney's is located. Henrietta Street near the Highland Park Diner. There's at least one of these streets in the Maplewood area. And I think these were planted after the elm trees were taken down, and these are just longer-lived trees than the Norway maples. So, you know, walking down or driving down those streets that still have these sycamores are, it's really striking. The bark of the tree is cool, and they're big trees. So you don't have to go to a literal forest in a park or in the wild. You can enjoy the trees right in your own neighborhood. Part of it, I think, is appreciating the size and the age of the trees. But a lot of it is just being mindful of what's there and noticing cicadas that are starting to sing and watching for lightning bugs as it gets later in the day. And again, finding more reasons to spend more time in nature. And talking with some friends who live in New York City during the shutdown period, and you're in a big apartment building with just elevators, and you're probably not going to do 30 floors of stairs very often. And once you go outside, there's a few big parks like Central Park for a city of 9 million. That's not very much green space, and just feel extraordinarily lucky to live in our area where you can walk down a street and enjoy the trees. You can get to a park in a few minutes, and it's not going to be as crowded as Central Park, for example. And there's some really neat little small parks around our area. So, the big parks, Highland Park in particular, as I've said before, tends to be more crowded. So go to some parts of Highland Park that are lesser known. Virtually the entire block across South Avenue from the conservatory, sort of between South Avenue and Mount Hope, is all part of Highland Park. There are some streets along or some houses along Reservoir on that side of the street, but other than that, it's pretty much all park area, and that's where Highland Bowl is. You can walk around that and down to Mount Hope Avenue, explore the older parts of the cemetery there. Again, some really large trees and some shade for the hot weather that we've been having. If you have a favorite small park around our area, email me, michael@saverlife.com. One way to find some interesting ones in our area might be to just Google parks in Monroe County, and then go in search of the ones you haven't heard of. It's likely that there won't be that many people, especially during the week, and maybe early morning or later in the afternoon. And let me know what you discover about some of these parks. You may find some really special places that are just not very well known. A couple weeks ago, I was in Seneca Falls. Josh Derso did an interview with me, Finger Lakes One. You can find that. Just search Finger Lakes One and Michael Warren Thomas. You'll find the interview that he did, and you can see the crazy pandemic shutdown hair that I had, which luckily my daughter was able to cut and back to a more reasonable length for the hot weather. But thanks to Josh for doing the interview. Always interesting to talk to him. You'll see tons of interviews that he's done at Finger Lakes One. www.grapeseeds.com. And they also, I think I mentioned this a few weeks ago, they do filming of city and town and village meetings. And not all of them, but there are some towns that have contracted with them, including Seneca Falls. And they just had a town meeting a week ago, so or less than a week ago. You can check that out at fingerlakes1.com. It's a way to connect with the smaller towns in our area, and I hope that more towns and villages will record their meetings so that people that are maybe out of town or working or taking care of children, etc., and can't get to these meetings can still see what happens in their own communities. And it's very simple. I mean, really, someone with a phone, a smartphone, could record a meeting, and it would be still relatively useful, depending on how close they are to the speakers, or the podium. You might get something that is surprisingly good. I would only do that with permission of the town board or whatever, although it is a public meeting. But, I think it would be respectful to ask permission to do that. If they denied you permission, then, decide what you want to do, given that it is a public meeting. But I think most town boards and things would be fine with that. And the people at Finger Lakes One were saying that you can get a fairly nice professional camera that can do some zooming in, and I mean, you can do that with an iPhone too, but it's better microphones, better sound, better video quality for in the range of $2,000 investment. I don't mean the general public would invest it. I mean the town or the village might. And again, that's a way to make more transparent what's happening in the towns and villages, especially around our region, and especially leading up to the election that's coming up in November. But we need more information, and we need to engage people more. And this can be done fairly simply. The Finger Lakes One said that they would consult with a town that wanted to do this, and the town runs their own camera, and Finger Lakes One doesn't have to go out and actually do the filming. They can consult at no charge for that. You can hire them to come out and do it, and they'll do a really nice job of it. So encourage your towns, your villages, to think about this, and think about doing it themselves. Maybe, having a middle school or high school student do this filming for you. It'd be a great experience for that student. It's kind of like an internship. And they would learn about government, learn about the technology, and the town or village would have the recordings that can be posted very easily these days. So it doesn't need to cost that much. I would guess you could find something a lot cheaper than $2,000 that would perhaps do an adequate job, and even a camera or a newer iPhone might work just as well. It's just to have to have someone who wants to experiment with it. And I would think a student would be a really ideal person to do this, and especially right now with the social distancing and the masks that are they're mandated. If you're near people within 6 feet here in New York State, I hope you show that respect, and that means that fewer people will come to village and town board meetings. Some of them are done virtually, so. It's all a Zoom meeting or some kind of online meeting, But if there are some done in person, sometimes the public can't be there or doesn't want to be there because of safety concerns. And so recording them might be a great way to do this. And if the student didn't want to be in close proximity to the speakers, they could set up the camera. When the meeting started, they would push play or record and then leave the room and just come back when the meeting is over and disconnect the camera, upload the audiovisual, and they're done. And you know, they have very, very minimal exposure if they're not in there for the entire meeting. So we just have to be creative about this. And again, I've said many times, what happens in the small towns of any region, but in the Finger Lakes in particular, affects the entire region. And the more transparency that we have, the better. More awareness of what's happening, what the issues are, and how they might impact the entire region. Willow Lean from Eagle Crest Vineyards, he's said for many years, as he's been one of the leaders fighting gas storage expansion in Seneca Lake and Watkins Glen, as well as the trash incinerator. Some good news recently that the sludge processing plant that was proposed for right near, how near it was, but in proximity to Del Lago Casino in Butler, New York, that was sewage sludge coming from New York City. They've decided not to go ahead with that. Thankfully, we already have garbage trucks coming from New York City, hundreds every day, to the Seneca Falls landfill. We don't need more trucks carrying sewage sludge coming to the Finger Lakes. So that has been defeated. A company has withdrawn their applications to do this. As I said, Willow Lean from Eagle Crest Vineyards, just above Hemlock Lake, has said many times that this brand of the Finger Lakes is so valuable. It's been built by generations, and yet it's fragile because if there's an environmental accident in one of the towns in the Finger Lakes, the Finger Lakes will be in the news. They're likely to maybe even lead with that rather than the town of Butler or the town of Romulus or Hector, because the Finger Lakes is much more widely known, internationally known now. And so it's an incredibly valuable brand that we need to protect. And the decisions made in small towns have a huge impact on that brand. So again, fingerlakes1.com, get some details there and encourage your town or village to consider recording on their own and making that available. And also I saw a note from Patrice DeMay at Chateau Renaissance that he's got lavender wine back again. One of the few wineries in the Finger Lakes that produces wines like this that are herbal wines, fruit wine. He does do fruit wines like cherry wine, but very few wineries do lavender. And he's got a bunch of others, including dandelion wine and ginger lemon wine. There's strawberry wine, elderberry wine, cranberry, pear. So that's in addition to his regular wines. He does Riesling and Chardonnay. Located right down in Hammondsport, but not in the village. It's kind of just outside the village, closer to the Glenn Curtis Museum. And he sells down in New York City also. So he was bringing the lavender wine this weekend down to New York City. He makes Merlot, and actually I think his specialty really are sparkling wines. So look for some of those and sample those. He does one called Rouge, and a beautiful pink color, and quite a few others. Method Champenoise, Rosé de Mai is one of them. So a winery to look for and maybe go down and visit. It's generally, it's not a very, very well-known winery. It's pretty small. It's been there quite a while, but it's not one likely to be crowded. I would call first and maybe make an appointment. That's, if possible, I think the best way to visit wineries these days. Make a couple appointments, and then if you have extra time, maybe there are a couple other wineries that might be open without appointments. But good to plan ahead, and a great reason to go down to Hammondsport. Just a beautiful area if you haven't been down there. The square, which is, it's kind of tiny but really quaint, and just a lovely spot with great history. This was the heart of winemaking in the Finger Lakes in the 1800s, and in fact, there was only one winery on Seneca Lake up until Wagner and Glenora opened in the 1970s. Before that, only one winery, which I think was maybe before Prohibition. Lots of vineyards, but all the wineries were in Hammondsport. It was the Pleasant Valley and Urbana and Gold Seal, Taylor, Bully Hill, and more. Those go back a long ways. But the rest of the lakes, the wineries are much newer, except for Widmer on Canandaigua Lake and also Eagle Crest Vineyards on Seneca Lake. And by the way, Eagle Crest Vineyards is inviting people to come out and bring chairs and picnics if you like. You can bring some lawn games and things. They have a beautiful area to kind of get out and enjoy the countryside and the national for the forest that's around there. They're doing setting up some glamping sites. It's pretty cool what they're doing. So weekends, again, today and tomorrow, they're encouraging people to come out and enjoy the property. The winery will be open for tastings, and you can walk down to Hemlock Lake. It's kind of a steep walk, though, and you don't want flip-flops to do this. And people have difficulty walking, shouldn't probably do it, but it is accessible. There's kind of a good path down there. It's just a little bit steep and worth going down and seeing Hemlock Lake. It's just, it's stunning. No cottages, really. There are people who canoe and then maybe even can take small motorboats there, you know, 5 horsepower or less, maybe something like that. But I've never seen them down on Hemlock Lake. It's, when I've gone down, it's just pristine beauty, and the occasional bald eagle. In fact, we interviewed Will Aline a couple months ago, maybe it was in the fall, and while we were interviewing him, a bald eagle flew over the winery. So a gorgeous area, but only about 45 minutes south of Rochester. You can go to eaglecrestvineyards.com and get more details. But again, get outside and enjoy a beautiful area just south of us. We'll be back tomorrow with the Grapevine at 9 a.m. tomorrow. And of course, you can, we'll be adding older shows and interviews and things over time. So you can go back in the archives here at saverlife.com. Enjoy the cooler weather and hope you get out to some of the farmers markets. I saw a note that Sunscape Farms is for the first time at the Fairport Farmers Market. And that only goes till noon today, though, so not a lot of time. But the Brighton Farmers Market is tomorrow. The Westside Farmers Market will be on Tuesday, St. Monica's Church on Genesee Street, 4 to 7, 4 to 7:30. And if you know of some beautiful destinations in the Finger Lakes, email me, michael@saverlife.com. Again, back with a Grapevine tomorrow, 9 a.m. here at saverlife.com.